أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Verse number 234. والذين يتوفون منكم ويذرون أزواجا يتربصن بأنفسهن أربعة أشهر وعشرا فإذا بلغن أجلهن فلا جناح عليكم فيما فعلن في أنفسهن بالمعروف والله بما تعملون خبير. As for those of you who die leaving wives, they shall wait by themselves 4 months and 10 days. And when they complete their term, there will be no sin upon you in respect of what they may do with themselves, in accordance with honorable norms. And Allah is well aware of what you do. The previous verses discussed about the waiting period or iddah of the ladies who were divorced. Now, this verse talks about the waiting period of the widows, those whose husbands have passed away. Now, it says that those of you who pass away, whose lives are taken by Allah, and they leave wives behind. Now, the wives should wait for 4 months and 10 days. Wait by themselves 4 months and 10 days. So this is the iddah for the widowed. And in the iddah or waiting period of the divorcees, of course, it was different between the one who was in the age of menzes, the one who wasn't, the one who for whom the marriage was consummated, the one who hadn't consummated. But here it's the same for everyone. Therefore, if, for example, the wife is widowed without having the marriage consummated, she should wait for 4 months and 10 days. If it's permanent or temporary marriage, it's the same things. They should wait for 4 months and 10 days, except for pregnant women. Now, for the pregnant women, of course, there's a disagreement among different schools of fiqh. For example, some Sunni schools say that the pregnant women, as soon as they deliver, their iddah would finish. So, for example, if the husband dies now and in 15 days the lady delivers, the iddah finishes. This is the idea of the view of some Sunni schools. However, for Shia schools, it's different. It's the longer duration. So if, for example, the lady delivers in 2 months, she should wait for the rest of 4 months and 10 days. If she delivers, if she doesn't deliver in 4 months and 10 days, then she should wait until she delivers. And this is the sort of combination of the two verses, that وَأُولَاتُ الْأَحْمَالِ أَجَلَهُنَّ أَنْ يَذَعْنَ حَمْلَهُنَّ. That's we have in Surah Talaq. And their waiting period is until they deliver. And this one, which says that the waiting period for the widowed women is 4 months and 10 days. So there's this difference of opinion among Sunni, some Sunni schools and Shia schools. And then it says, فَلَا جُنَاحَ عَلَيْكُمْ فِيمَا فَعَلْنَا فِي أَنفُسِهِنَّ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. There is no responsibility. Junah may mean two things. One is responsibility, the other is sin. Here in these verses, when it says, لَا جُنَاحَ عَلَيْكُمْ, it's either addressed to the family or the society in general, that you have no responsibility after that. The point is that for widowed women, usually the families feel responsibility, that they have to somehow be careful that she doesn't do anything wrong, she wouldn't marry, for example, in the first year or in the second year. And different cultures have different customs in that. For example, the Arabs before Islam, they believed that the widowed woman should not marry for 1 year. And nowadays, many cultures, they say, okay, before even 1 year, she didn't wait even for 1 year after her husband passed away and she married. And they feel this is bad. Now, of course, what the Quran says is that your responsibility and their responsibility is 4 months and 10 days. And after that, you should not stop them. They have no responsibility to, for example, keep themselves not marrying. And in some cultures, of course, this was even graver. For example, they buried the wives with husbands, thinking that they have to be, the wife is forever somehow hooked to the husband even after she has passed away. So here, La Junaha Alaykum, Allah is actually, in a metaphorical way, says that you should not, you should actually look after your business. Her business is to her, and you have no responsibility on that. And after 4 months and 10 days, the iddah is finished, she can marry. مَا فِي مَا فَعَلْنَا فِي أَنفُسِهِنَّ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ in whatever they do, of course, in honorable terms, if they want to go out of that honorable sort of life, of course, the society is responsible for أَمْرَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَالنَّحْيَ عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ وَاللَّهُ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ خَبِيرٌ of course, Allah knows what you do. This sort of sentences we have all the time in these verses about talaq, about social treatment of women and the like. Now, when a lady is widowed, certainly other men would think that, okay, it's now, for example, halal for us to marry this woman. Or the ladies would think that, think of a man or vice versa. And usually, of course, this becomes somehow difficult in terms of different men, for example, wanting to suit this lady to ask for a hand. Here it says that while she is in waiting period, you cannot directly ask them for marriage after the waiting period is finished, of course. In revocable talaq, in raj'i talaq, when, of course, the husband still has the right to revoke the talaq, it is haram for someone to suit or to ask for the hand of the lady, because the lady is still somehow attached to the husband, and it's not permissible for someone to ask for her hand. But what about the talaq or the demise of the husband, talaq in a way which is not revocable, talaq al-ba'in, like khul, for example? Is it permissible for a person to suit the lady, to ask for her hand, that, for example, would you agree to marry me after the iddah is finished? Because during the iddah is haram, whether it's for widows or divorces, is haram. And if two people does that, if a man and woman does that, they become haram to each other forever, and they never can marry again. The reason is that this waiting period should be observed and should be respected, and people shouldn't think that they have to take it lightly. However, in the case of widows, when they have to wait for 4 months and 10 days, and in the case of khulu, where the lady should wait for 3 menzes, but of course the husband cannot come back to them, is it permissible for someone to ask them, to suit them and say that, okay, do you agree that we marry after your waiting period is finished? Here the verse says that if you do that as a way of hinting, not directly proposing, is permissible. Directly proposing is not permissible, because that would create difficulties. So the verse is actually, this verse 235 is talking about that. وَلَا جُنَاهَ عَلَيْكُمْ فِيمَا أَرَّضَتُمْ بِهِ مِنْ خِطْبَةِ النِّسَاءِ أَوْ أَكْنَنْتُمْ فِي أَنفُسِكُمْ There is no sin upon you in what you may hint in proposing to recently widowed women, or what you may secretly cherish within your hearts. No, khitbatun nisa. Khitba is similar to khutba, but they have two meanings. Khutba is to preach, to speak, to preach people, and the person who does it is khatib. Khitba is to ask for the hands or to suit ladies, and the person is khatib. So the file here is different. So a khatib, or someone who suits a lady, it is permissible for them to hint. Like, for example, what's the meaning of hinting? For example, saying that, well, I've been looking for a lady with your sort of qualities. This is a hinting that I want to marry you after your edda is finished. Or, for example, you are a very good lady and people should be honored to have someone like you as their wives. Things like this. So the Mufassirin say these things are permissible, but proposing directly that would you marry me after your waiting period is finished, this is not permissible. However, some Sunni scholars say that hint, which is not explicit, is anything below the recitation of nikah. So proposing is permissible. This is, of course, against the view of all Shi'i scholars and, of course, many other Sunni scholars. So hinting is permissible. Now, why these things are mentioned in such a detail in the Quran? I mean, one would wonder why these things are mentioned in such a detail in the Quran. The reason is that these things are very common in the society. I mean, these things happen on a daily basis. And Allah wants to put them in a sort of frame which is acceptable, honorable to society and to families. So, la junaha alaykum, there is no sin upon you in what you may hint in proposing to recently widowed women, or what you may secretly cherish within your hearts. Now, of course, a man may think about a woman that's now she's widowed, I want to marry her after her wedding period is finished. This is something which is not in the control of people. They always think in such terms, and therefore Allah says, of course, there is no sin upon these things which are not in your control, as long as you do not express them. Because when you express them, then it becomes something vulgar in society. And we have, for example, hadith about other things that may be not in your control, but the expression of them are in your control. Like, for example, hasad or jealousy. Jealousy sometimes is not in our control. It comes from the heart. Of course, it comes from a diseased heart, but the heart is like that. It comes as long as you do not express it by your action or by your words, then there's no sin on that. We have a hadith that إِذَا حَسَدْتَ فَلَا تَبْغِي. If you feel jealous, do not transgress or do not wrong others because of that hasad. As long as you do not do that, it's fine. So things like this, which come to the heart, a person is not actually in control of them. Thoughts pass the heart and mind of people. Of course, one should always try to refine their thoughts and hearts so that these thoughts would not attack them or do not come to them. But if it is not in their control, they cannot do anything about them. And that is why Allah says, عَلَمَ اللَّهُ أَنَّكُمْ سَتَذْكُرُونَهُنَّ. Allah knows that you will be thinking of them. It's a natural thing. So if this is a natural thing, Allah has put it in a frame which is permissible and honorable. وَلَكِنْ لَا تُوَاعِدُوهُنَّ سِرًّا. But do not talk to each other in secret. It is not allowed for you to do that. Do not talk to each other in a, for example, secret place where no one is there, or say things that you would not say in public. I mean, in public it's fine if, for example, you say to a lady that a lady with your qualities would be desirable for me, but other things that you cannot say in public, you should not say to these ladies. As I said, it's just to put these things in frame. وَلَكِنْ لَا تُوَاعِدُهُنَّ سِرًّا إِلَّا أَن تَقُولُوا قَوْلًا مَعْرُوفًا. Except even if you talk to each other privately, you have to talk in a way which is acceptable in public as well. إِلَّا أَن تَقُولُوا قَوْلًا مَعْرُوفًا وَلَا تَعْزِمُوا عقدت النکاح حتی یبلغ الکتاب و اجله. کتاب means what is written on you. As we have in many other verses of the Quran, kitab means what is written. In salat, kanat ala al-mu'minina kitaban, mawquta salat is a kitab, means it's written on you, is a fariza for you that you have to do it in certain times. So do not resolve on a marriage tie until the prescribed term is complete. Atta yablugh al-kitabu ajala. So until 4 months and 10 days is passed. As I said, if they do it before that time, then they will become haram for each other forever. وَأَلَمُوا أَنَّ اللَّهَ يَعْلَمُ مَا فِي أَنفُسَكُمْ فَحْذَرُوهُ. Now you should know that Allah knows what is in your heart, so beware of Him. Beware of Him because He knows what is in your heart. He knows that how you think. He knows that how you want to perform or to bring into action your thoughts. وَأَلَمُوا أَنَّ اللَّهَ غَفُورٌ حَلِيمٌ. And you should know that Allah is all-forgiving, all-forbearing. Now, some exegetes say that this term here, that Allah is all-forgiving, all-forbearing, means that all these things that I said is based on sort of overlooking what you do in these things. You shouldn't even do these things. But because we know that you are weak, we know that your faith may be affected if these things are not allowed for you, then, of course, Allah has allowed them. It's, in a way, looking at things practically. I mean, for example, in Christianity, it is very ideal that one man, one woman tied to each other forever. They cannot divorce, they cannot marry after, for example, they become widowed. It's ideal. But is it practical as well? It's not practical. And that's why we see that with such very harsh and strict rulings, society somehow breaks it and come out of the whole idea of law and things like that. So, وَعْلَمُوا أَنَّ اللَّهَ غَفُورٌ حَلِيمٌ. Allah is forbearing, Allah is forgiving, meaning that these things, of course, you do it because you have such desires and such things, and Allah accepts it because He's forgiving. Otherwise, ideally, yes, ideally things should be in different way. Verse 236, لا جناح عليكم إن طلقتم النساء ما لم تمسوهن أو تفرضوا لهن فريضة ومتعوهن على الموسى قدره وعلى المقتر قدره متاعا بالمعروف حقا على المحسنين. There is no sin upon you if you divorce women while you have not yet touched them. And touching them means, of course, you haven't consummated the marriage. As I said before, Quran never uses direct terms, explicit terms for sexual relation. It's always an indirect sort of figure of a speech. So there is no sin upon you if you divorce women while you have not yet touched them or settled a dowry for them. You provide for them the well-off according to his capacity and the poorly-off according to his capacity with a sustenance that is honorable, an obligation on the virtues. The first thing that we have to consider regarding this verse is that we know that mahr, or marriage gift, here dowry is mentioned. Apparently, dowry means in English culture, dowry meant what the wife's family gave to husband for the marriage. It was a custom, for example, an estate or something like that they gave to the husband, so the marriage takes place. But of course, we use it for mahr as well. It means the gift that the husband should give to the wife in marriage. If the mahr is not mentioned in the formula of marriage, nikah, is the nikah acceptable or not? Now, if the nikah is temporary, no, it's not acceptable. It's void. The mahr should be mentioned in the formula of nikah. If the nikah is permanent, if it's aqd al-da'im, then it is permissible that they do not mention any mahr, and the mahr could be settled later on. And therefore, here it says that if you divorce a woman and you have not settled on a mahr for them, it means that it is permissible to do a marriage without settling a mahr. But if the marriage is consummated, then a mahr should be mentioned. Or if it's not mentioned, the something similar to what other women would have as their mahr would become incumbent on the husband to give to the wife. So if you... لا جناح عليكم إن طلقتم النساء ما لم تمسوهن. Two things. First of all, if you have not consummated the marriage yet, there's no problem if you want to divorce. Secondly, if you have not mentioned a mahr, again, there is no problem if you want to divorce. If you have not mentioned the mahr, but you have consummated the marriage, the ruling will be mentioned in the following verse. But if you have not mentioned the mahr and you have not consummated the marriage, the ruling is like this that is mentioned in this verse. لا جناح عليكم إن طلقتم النساء ما لم تمسوهن أو تفرضوا لهن فريضة. What you have to do, you haven't mentioned any mahr, you have not consummated the marriage, you divorce. Is it permissible for the husband to say, okay, we didn't mention any mahr, just you go your way, I go my way? No. وَمَتْعُهُنَّ. You have to give them something. It's just something like a mahr or anything like that. Although you haven't mentioned, you have to give them مَتْعُهُنَّ عَلَى الْمُوسَئَ قَدَرُهُ وَعَلَى الْمُقْتَرِ قَدَرُهُ. For the rich, based on their affordability, and for the poor, based on their affordability. Mata'an bil ma'ruf. It should be something customary, honorable, and it is a right on the virtues. Haqqan alal muhsanin. Now, this mata'an bil ma'ruf, it's very interesting what is mentioned here. Is that here in this society, for example, according to the law of this land, if a couple marry but do not live with each other, they just decide to divorce before living with each other, of course, nothing would go to the wife. However, here it says that you have to give them something, and that something is not something inconsiderable. Alal musa'i qadar, the rich, based on their affordability. Now, what is the affordability? For example, we have in hadith that إن الغني يمتّع بدار, a house. Wow, you have married a lady, for example. You haven't consummated the marriage. You want to divorce for whatever reason, and we know things become very bitter. Okay, just give them a house and let them go. And this means that the aqd or the tie of marriage is something very respectable. And just by saying that we haven't mentioned the mahr or anything, it doesn't work like that. So, إِنَّ الْغَنِيُّ يُمَتْعُ بِدَارٍ أَوْ خَادِمٍ وَالْوَسَطْ يُمَتْعُ بِثَوْبٍ. Someone who is moderate, for example, something like a very nice dress. وَالْفَقِيرُ بِدِرْهَمٍ أَوْ خَاتَمٍ. And someone who is poor, like, for example, giving a ring or something like that. Something which they can afford. So, عَلَى الْمُوسِئِ قَدَرُهُ وَعَلَى الْمُقْتَرِ قَدَرُهُ مَتَاعًا بالمعروف. It should be honorable. Whatever you give should be honorable. حَقًّا عَلَى الْمُحْسَنِينَ. Now, this حَقًّا عَلَى الْمُحْسَنِينَ is a right on the virtues, may actually allude or give us the impression that it's only for those who want to be highly virtuous. It's not wajib on everyone. However, in hadith we have that it is فَرِيضَ مُطْعَةُ الْمُحْسَنِينَ mutallaqa farida, it is wajib. And when Allah says haqqan al muhsinin, it means that all mu'mineen should be muhsinin. All of you should be muhsinin. All of you should be virtuous in doing right thing when you are in this this sort of relationship. The following verse, وَإِن طَلَّقْتُمُوهُنَّ مِنْ قَبْلِ أَن تَمَسُّوهُنَّ وَقَدْ فَرَضْتُمْ لَهُنَّ فَرِيضَةً فَنِصْفُ مَا فَرَضْتُمْ إِلَّا أَن يَعْفُونَ أَوْ يَعْفُوَ الَّذِي بِيَدِهِ عُقْدَةُ النِّكَاحِ. Now, what if the mahr is mentioned, but before consummating the marriage, you divorce? So, if you divorce them before you touch them and you have already settled the mahr for them, then pay them half of what you have settled. So this is, of course, a very straightforward law, that the mahr for a divorce when the marriage is not consummated is half the settled or the mentioned mahr. Unless they forego it, unless if they say we don't want, we didn't live with each other, I have not come here for to take your money, or someone in whose hand is the marriage tie forgoes. Now, there is two interpretations for this. أَوْ يَعْفُ وَالَّذِي بِيَدِهِ أُقْدَةُ النِّكَاحِ, someone in whose hand. It means if, for example, the wife has authorized someone to do the marriage for her, as they usually do, the wali or something like that, or if he forgoes because she says, whatever you do, whatever you settle with the husband is fine. Or the other explanation is the one in whose hand is the tie of marriage is the husband. So, and this is a stronger opinion here. So if the wife says, I don't want the half, or the husband says, no, I pay the full. It's better, isn't it? Both of them should be somehow gracious in this matter. The wife could say, I don't want, like, for example, if you lend some money to someone, it's mustahab for that someone, when they pay back your money, to add something to it. It's not riba, because you haven't settled on any interest or anything like that. It's mustahab for the person who has borrowed the money to add something to it. And for example, they have borrowed £1,000, they give you £1,100, just as a courtesy. And it's mustahab for you not to take it, isn't it? Say, no, I don't take anything. Now, so long as it doesn't actually lead up to an argument and quarrel, it's fine. But the istihbab, the graciousness, is always there. The same thing with marriage, and it's very interesting, because usually in divorce things get very bitter and things become somehow unresolvable, unthinkable. Allah says, وَلَا تَنْسَوُ الْفَضْلَ بَيْنَكُمْ, do not forget graciousness. You have to be gracious all the time. And therefore, here it's good for the wife or the wakil of the wife or whoever, or wali of the wife, to say, we don't want anything, that's fine. You lived with each other. And it's good for the husband to say that, no, I pay the full, because we married, of course, it didn't work out, but I pay the full mahr. So, إِلَّا أَن يَعْفُونَ أَوْ يَعْفُوَ الَّذِي بِيَدِهِ أُقْدَةُ النِّكَاحِ وَأَن تَعْفُوا أَقْرَبُ لِلتَّقْوَى. If you forego, it is closer to God-wariness, closer to taqwa. It's always like that. It's always in such cases that the faith of a person is tested, isn't it? It's not tested by salat and sawm and things like that. The faith of people are usually tested in these situations where things are bitter, when there is grudge, there is hostility. If they can remember God in these situations, of course, their faith are tested. وَأَن تَعْفُوا أَقْرَبُ لِلتَّقْوَى وَلَا تَنْسَوُ الْفَضْلَ بَيْنَكُمْ. And do not forget graciousness among yourselves. This is one of the most beautiful maxims of the Quran, that always be gracious to each other. Whether you are in animosity, whether you are in friendship, whether in such bitter situations at talaq, do not forget to be gracious. وَلَا تَنْسَوُ الْفَضْلَ بَيْنَكُمْ إِنَّ اللَّهَ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ بَصِيرٌ. Allah is, of course, watchful over what you do. There is a beautiful hadith from Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam from the Prophet, peace be on him. قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله يأتي على الناس زمان عضوض. There will come a time on people which is a snappish time. People want to grab to whatever they can. يأذ كل امرئ على ما في يديه. People want to grab whatever they have. وينسون الفضل بينهم. They forget graciousness. And sometimes we see that these things are happening in our society. Among Muslims, all these things which are mentioned are among Muslims, actually. And in Nahj al-Balagha, something very similar. يَأْتِ al-nas zamanun adudun. There will come a time, a snappish time, where people just grab with their teeth whatever they have. يَأَذُّ الْمُوسَرُ فِيهَ عَلَى مَا فِي يَدَيْهِ. The rich just grabs strongly whatever they have. They don't want to give anything out. وَلَمْ يُؤْمَرْ بِذَٰلِكَ. And they are not instructed like that. They are instructed to give. قَالَ اللَّهُ سُبْحَانَهُ وَلَا تَنْسَوُ الْفَضْلَ بَيْنَكُمْ. Allah says, do not forget graciousness among yourself. تَنْهَدُ فِيهَ الْأَشْرَارِ. The ashrar, the evil people, rise in that time. وَتُسْتَذَلُّ الْأَخْيَارِ. And good people are humiliated in that time. And if sometimes someone acts graciously, other people actually would rebuke them. Oh, you don't you have mind? Are you out of your mind, for example, behaving in such a way? وَيُبَايَعُ الْمُضْطَرُّونَ. And people who are مُضْطَر, it means they have lost, of course, they have borrowed and they don't have money to pay back. It's مُضْطَر, isn't it? Now, they are sold out, just like the bailiff, that people come and take whatever is in the house or take the house. وَقَدْ نَهَى رَسُولُ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ عَنْ بَيْعِ الْمُضْطَرِّينَ. And Rasulullah forbade that the مُضْطَرِّين, their property should be sold out. And this is an Islamic law. For example, if someone is in debt, their house or whatever they need, their house, their car, they are not sold out to pay off their debts. Well, they have to wait until he can pay it out. And therefore, the bailiff that it has become very common in the modern society is something which is not allowed in Islam. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi at-tahirin.
Thank you very much, Indy Sheikh. Very interesting. So, and brothers, sisters, anybody wants to take it? Any points further? Any sisters, any brother? Sheikh, from the discussion, I understand that when there is a talaq, when talaq takes place without a consummation, then it seems there is no waiting period.
Yeah, there's no waiting period.
Okay, fine.
Except if the husband dies, then of course there is waiting period of iddatul wafat, not iddatul talaq.
Oh, even though they may not have been consummated.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank
you. Salaam alaikum, Sheikh. A lot of these discussions, like we're having today, they make me. I still don't understand the concept of mahar. Is it a compensation for the wife? Is it a gift? Is it what is the thought behind it?
Well, it's very explicitly mentioned in the Quran. وَآتُوا النِّسَاءَ صَدُقَاتِهِنَّ نِحْلَةً. Give them as a gift. It's just a gift.
So in modern society, there's almost a thought that it's almost a compensation at the time of divorce or a penalty. Was mahar ever like that?
No. Mahar is a debt that husband has to pay. Even if they don't pay and pass away, for example, it should be paid off from the inheritance before the inheritance is distributed among the heirs. So it is a debt. They have to pay it, whether they divorce or not divorce. This wrong conception that it is only payable on divorce. However, maybe the wives or be honorable that during the marriage period, they don't ask for it. That's fine if they don't ask for it. If they just say, we don't want it, that's fine. It's good. فَإِن طِبْنَ لَكُمْ عَنْ شَيْءٍ فَكُلُوهُ هَنِيًا مَرِيًا. So if they give you away their mat, that you can eat it, it's fine. So the wrong conception that is only for divorce is not something Islamic.
It does. I'm sorry to hog the mic, but it does make me wonder what protects a woman. Say, for example, she's got 5 kids, she's 45, and her husband decides, I'd like to divorce. Let's say all those kids are above the age of 7. They go across to they're under the responsibility of the man. What protects a woman in that situation? She's suddenly homeless. She might have left her career for the past 20 years. What protection is there for her?
Well, protection, of course, in an Islamic society, women always remarry. I mean, in ideal Islamic society, as or in the past, they usually remarried, as we have in the early years of Islam. No woman actually remained without a husband. After the divorce or after the demise of the husband, there was a remarriage. If there is too much protection, then we will go into a different paradigm of life in society. And that is, women will think that, okay, we have protection, we have our income, society is paying for us, or someone else is paying for us, why should we marry? Okay? Then we become, we go into a different paradigm of life, that people want to live single, they don't want to marry. There is always positive and negative sort of aspects to every law, isn't it? What Islam is trying to actually promote is that women and men should not remain single. They have to marry. And therefore, not that too much protection is there. However, when you mention 5 kids, the nafaqa or the provision of kids is on the husband. Whether they live together or they divorce, it's on the husband. And therefore, the husband should provide for them. And therefore, we may have some social, of course, security for ladies as well. I mean, provide, the society may have to provide as well for them. However, as I said, it should be balanced all the time. The balance is that the protection is not be so much that ladies would think that, okay, why should we marry? Or the men would think that, why should we marry and take the responsibility and things like that.
Any sisters before you go back to the brothers?
No. I have 2 questions, if I may. The first one is, you were saying women always remarried, but from what I understand, the cultural taboo was if women were divorced or they were widowed, nobody wanted to marry them. Hence, the Prophet had to set examples because they wouldn't be remarried.
Yes.
And the second point is, what exactly is the point of a mahar? In some cultures, people don't get married because they can't afford the mahar. It's a hugely exorbitant amount. In other cultures, it's a very much a token. I mean, you don't even think about it as it's probably a couple of days' salary.
Well, it should be something ma'ruf, honorable, isn't it?
But how so many cultures across, Islamic cultures are so different. What is the...
No, it's not Islamic cultures. These are regional cultures, you know. So, for example, Islamic culture, no one should stop a woman to remarry after the waiting period, whether it's 3 months or 4 months and 10 days, no one should stop them. But we know that cultures are different. In some cultures, it's a taboo for them to marry for life. And they say, we want to dedicate ourselves to our children, for example, things like this. Although no one would realize that how difficult it may be for women to remain without husband. So, as I said, these are different paradigms of life and of social life. In Islam, you said the Prophet set the example, the companion set the example. Actually, as soon as a woman's husband was martyred, and as soon as the waiting period was finished, she wouldn't wait for long until someone else would have married her. So, yes, in sort of Islamic paradigm of social life, especially in these matters. This should not be taboo, but cultures have made it a taboo, certainly.
Thank you. Any sisters? No? Sure.
Coming back to his question, like in the British law, after a divorce, there is a calculation depending upon what the husband earns or the wife's
earn. Or the wife's earn, this is what the husband has to pay for the upkeep. Is there anything like that in the Islamic law as far as...
Yeah, mata'an bil ma'ruf or a provision bil ma'ruf. وَعَلَى الْوَالِدِ مَوْلُودِ لَهُ رِزْقُهُنَّ وَكِسْوَتُهُنَّ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ Ma'ruf is something which is based on the prices in every time, based on the sort of type of living. And therefore, at every time, a society can set an amount or something like that, that the husband should pay. And it's not something that could be specified. It's something that at every time may differ.
Right, so who decides then at that time?
Well, the law. The law should decide, yes. If there is an Islamic sort of society with Islamic authorities, then the laws should be all the time modified based on the change in time. Even these laws, like, for example, half the property would go to women, it could all be actually somehow deduced from this ma'ruf, which we are hearing from the Quran. We should not stick to what, for example, the old fuqaha have said, ancient fuqaha, this is the amount, for example. It's not something which is common or ma'ruf in our society. So whatever is ma'ruf in every society is important.
So in a case where the wife is more richer than the husband, does the wife have to pay the husband as well in the case of a divorce?
You know, the husbands are always oppressed.
Thank you. Any sisters? Any sisters? No? Brother? Any brother?
So just clarification. So when you're talking about this, this is has to be specified in part of the mahar, or just on a divorce, there is payment to be made if the mahar has already been paid?
Sorry.
So what Shiraz was asking about is that when you've got a divorce, so you're saying that society would decide upon what the wife would get?
For example, here it says matta'uhunna mata'an bil ma'ruf. For example, if the mahr is not mentioned, you have to give something based on ma'ruf. Then the social environment, the type of life would determine what that ma'ruf is.
But if
and the provision, for example, the husband should give for the children. Again, the society or the type of living would determine what type of provision they have to give.
But if the mahar is specified at the beginning...
Well, the mahar is paid. Mahar is different from provision, of course.
Okay.
Provision is one thing, mahar is another.
Yeah, so provision is only for the children, not for the wife.
For the children and for the wife, as long as she is in waiting period.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Any sisters? Any sisters? Anybody? Yeah.
Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh. You know, in response to that first question where you were saying that the wife shouldn't be that comfortable in the sense that, you know, that provision should sort of match that it would encourage her to remarry, for example, so she can, you know, have sustainability from another source. And it's just making me think about the actual concept of marriage. And when Allah has put the relationship is between, you know, Allah's put love and mercy in that relationship. So obviously it's going to, the woman may not want to remarry. And I'm just wondering where we draw the line between marrying for the sake of financial security as opposed to marrying because, you know, you want to share the rest of your life with that person.
Yeah, that's true. So therefore the wife is not really forced to marry. It's, the law doesn't force anyone to marry. However, I'm talking about a sort of macro vision of the society. That's how we organize this institution of society to encourage people to marry rather than to encourage them not to marry. You know, our society, modern society nowadays, is encouraging people not to marry. Because, first of all, women want their own freedom and their own independence. And men don't want to take responsibility. They can be with each other for a while and then go and without any responsibility. So, although individual, that's true. Individual, that's absolutely true, and they can decide for themselves. But when we have a sort of macro vision of society, how we want to legislate laws to encourage families, marriage life and these things, then of course we have to balance between these two things. Not that women are forced to marry because they need provision, and not to give them so much provision or give them men so much irresponsibility that they can just be with any woman without any responsibility, or women would feel that we don't want to marry because we are independent, we have our own income, or society protects us, or our family protect us, which is, all is there. What I said is that all these laws are based on promotion of marriage, on people not to live single, because that would bring lots of psychological problems on its own. So this is the important thing.
Thank you. Any brothers? Any brother, any sisters? Brother, any sister, no? It seems they're still thinking. So we'll think until the next week, then inshallah. Shukran, Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad Salawat. So we continue next week. Continue next week, inshallah.
Yes, inshallah, next.